Earners, what's up? Y'all know the adage, buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/earn. That's fundrise.com/earn. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Earners, what's up? Look, if creating content is more than just a passion project for you, it's time to make the passion profitable. With Kajabi, you can easily diversify your revenue, build your brand, and transform your audience into loyal customers. I know firsthand how challenging it can be to juggle content creation and business development, but Kajabi makes it easy to streamline everything in one place. As a creator, you are your brand, so your business should reflect exactly what you envision. With Kajabi, not only can you build your business your way, but you can also keep every cent of what you earn. It's an all-in-one platform that lets you focus on what matters most, your content and your audience. And let's face it, we all need a little help sometimes, especially when you're a one-person show. But you don't need to hire a full-time team. You just need Kajabi. Kajabi is a leading all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. Whether you're a coach, content creator, or educator, Kajabi makes it easy to transform your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, and more. The best part? Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue. Everything you create is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. On top of that, Kajabi gives you robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates, everything you need to grow your business seamlessly. And here's the thing, you don't need a massive audience to make sustainable income. Thousands of creators are making six and seven figures with Kajabi, even with less than 50,000 followers. So if you're navigating the challenges of generating revenue as a creator, Kajabi can be the game changer you need. Right now, Kajabi is offering an incredible deal, a free 30-day trial to help you kickstart your business. Just head over to kajabi.com/earn to get started. That's kajabi.com/earn. Join the creators and entrepreneurs who've made over $7 billion on their platforms and take control of your financial future with Kajabi today. Kajabi.com/earn. Don't miss out on this opportunity to turn your passion into profit.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Let's talk about it.
All right, guys. Welcome back.
We're back.
Special episode. If you're familiar with Earn Your Leisure, then you've noticed that we have used this background
a few times. Legendary moments.
And the one next door we've used probably even more times than that.
Yeah. What's your favorite? LA here?
LA's cool too. LA's a good vibe.
LA's a good vibe. We come here the most, so this is something that, you know, I think we've been coming here for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. We did some legendary interviews. Yeah. We interviewed Terrence Crawford in this one.
Terrence Crawford was here.
Robert Smith next door.
Robert Smith was legendary. Yeah.
Van Jones was here. That was a
Van Jones.
Did you have Stephen A. Smith next?
Yeah. He was next door.
He was next door.
Lawrence Tate was here. That episode went really well.
He went crazy. Yeah. That was in this one. So we've been back and forth. So Alex and Weezy are the owners of WTF Media.
Yeah.
And this particular podcast suite. What's the name of the podcast suite? WTF Podcast Suite?
Wait, this week? This is
like just these. This podcast studio.
We call it WTF Media Podcast Studios, like these. But the company itself is WTF Media. It's like bracketed into production. And, you know, you guys use our mobile a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, audio services, like even, I mean, when we've done international shoots too, it's basically anything developmental. It could be you needing literally A to Z production. Just you're a celebrity that wants to make a podcast and you don't know what it's about. Even one that we did that was really fun was Wayno. Wayno just wanted to work with us. He was like, I don't know what I want to do. I'm kind of, you know, he's done with everyday struggle. Like, what's next? So we got in the booth with him, with one of our writers, and got our engineers together, figured out a game plan on what his set would be like, what he would talk about. And it was great. Like, we do everything. It's pretty much anything under podcasting and hopefully, you know, film.
Yeah. So we've used his services for traveling too. Like you said, we use them for Alicia Keys offsite, Baron Davis offsite.
Yo, Gotti.
Barbara Cox.
Yeah,
for sure. That one too.
So I think it's an interesting conversation, you know, when we talk about the podcast industry and how fast it's growing and content creators and the content economy. There has to be some infrastructure for that.
Yeah, like people really have said so many times, I don't know if people have said this to you, but they're like, having a brick and mortar space is so rare.
Mm-hmm.
People have said all the time that like, we're crazy for it. Literally the first year we had to build two because we were so busy.
When was the first year?
2021.
April.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We went from making 200 that first year to our first seven figures.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this year. And like, we needed this room because we were so booked out in that one. So every single year we acquire a new space.
So, all right. First and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I want to break down the business model and give people some information and insight on, you know, how to actually, what you're doing. So, who started with the idea to have a podcast studio, to have, you know, all of the things that you have as far as a media company, and what was the first steps to get it done?
So, I would say it started with me. Pandemic, I was working in production. Work started to slow down a little bit because we had to be inside and shit. So, I needed to come up with something where it was like pandemic proof. And when I've been in podcasting production for about 8-9 years now. And so like, I just know this like the back of my hand, but I needed to build something where I don't need to be there all the time because I still have my other jobs that I need to be present for. And so coming up with the studio, it was like one of those shower ideas. It just hit me in the shower. And then I thought on it for a couple days, and then I brought it to Weezy immediately because I was like, yo, I think this is an idea. I'm not sure if I can execute, but I know the pieces of the puzzle that I'm missing, you possess.
Now, he didn't say that. You know, black people come up with a business plan drunk. We on the beach. We drinking beer. She's yeah. like, nigga, I got a PPP loan.
Yeah.
I got 60. What are we going to do with it? You know, it really, and it's funny because ideas are birthed like that between yeah. friends. You know what I'm saying? The same with my other podcast. Like, it's just like, you have this fun idea.
Was that how y'all met? Like, were you working on Horrible? And okay, yeah. So that's how the relationship is developed.
Mm-hmm. So I brought video to her podcast.
Gotcha.
Alex was doing our video for like $50 yeah. back then, which is crazy because no one even, I mean, I don't even know how he lugged three cameras to do it, then edit. There was no live switching at the time. So you got to piece it by, you know, technology has developed. But yeah, we knew each other from Horrible and then we became friends. And then he got fired. Mandy fired him because he raised his price, I think, the day of. but we still were friends. And so, you know, it's a blessing that Mandy, I think he hit up Mandy first. But basically when the studio started, you know, it was really difficult for me because I have no technical ability at all.
Mm.
But Alex had
none.
Okay.
Emphasis on the word.
Anyway, what was difficult about that is I was thinking to myself, like, I really want to do this with him. But being that he was bringing the initial capital in, it made me really scared because I needed to know that he saw the value in what I could bring. And honestly, I'm really grateful that he did because we truly like needed both of us for the business. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Even when clients come through the door, it's almost down the middle. Oh, I heard on Flagrant. Oh, I know Weezy. Or I saw this or that. It's somewhere or another it was referred.
Yeah, so that's the interesting part, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're bringing the capital, what are those qualities that you saw? Because it's interesting. I think when there's a like preconceived notion when people see you that it's, oh, that's the girl who closes. And I'm like, you and it, like two of the brightest women that I know.
Thank you.
So like, what did you see to say, like, this needs to be my partner?
Exactly what you said. I saw her, like, we bumped into each other at, where was that? Engine Room? And so when she was telling me about the concept of her podcast, I was like, wow, this is a brilliant concept. And then just talking with her more, and then we became friends, and I'm like, yo, you are a lightning bolt in a bottle. And I'm like, all the stuff that I don't have, I'm a introvert, like I just like, put me in a cave, let me just do my thing and I'm happy. She's the complete opposite, and she's very savvy, business minding, and the branding, everything is like the stuff that I don't really care about or want to do.
But so I was like, a seller before that's Horrible. True, yeah. Like I was in corporate sales, tech sales. And so, and it's funny because whenever we get on a Zoom with like a big company, that's the first thing Alex says, like, oh my God, Joe, you just be going in. Like literally, I think we had someone say to us once, yeah, do you guys have writers on staff? It was like a big company that wanted to hire us. I was like, yeah, absolutely. We have about 5 to 6. And he's looking at me like, no, we don't, bitch. But I'm going to find them. I'm going to source them. Yeah. Like, literally, if you ask me for something, I'll put it together. Y'all shoot for Alicia yesterday. If you guys said you guys have whatever lighting, there's probably no way we would tell you no. Because Alex would have been up at 6 a.m. going to B&H. We would have been sourcing it. Like, there's no no. And I think that's really what helps the both of us is like our brain will go anywhere. The fact that we were shooting when we did Pharrell in Paris and they was asking us if we had XYZ, it was like, nigga, we'll figure it out when we get to France. Yeah. But that's that hustler shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've never really felt scared in this business at all to not deliver. Like, I think that that's what's held a lot of other people back. We offer ABC. I don't even know what we offer until you say it. Like, we didn't even offer mobile until Alex just started seeing that that was the landscape that needed to change. It's a constant evolution with podcasting. Like, even down to the clips, how are we going to make money when the studio's booked? Well, now we got to start thinking of other ways, right? We need to make money with editing, even if the video's not coming out of us. We need to make money with clips because everyone needs those. We need to make money with outlines. This is stuff that can make money when the doors aren't operating. So like, that's how we've been able to get more overhead to keep building other studios. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we'll start from the beginning. You have an idea to have a podcast studio, right? So how much money does it cost to start this business? What are the essential items that you need? I know you need cameras, microphones, stuff like that. How do you go about getting a lease, building out the space? Like, what's that look like to actually build a podcast studio?
So we both attacked it from the things we were like our strong suits. So in terms of equipment, sound, lighting, and everything like that, I was putting together, this is like the shopping list that I need. And then she was handling leases and LLCs and setting up the bank and all that type of stuff.
How much was that, 40? Because it went up this year. We've been spending more on cameras now.
Oh, yeah. So the initial investment with just equipment, I would say, was 45, 50.
So,
because I went over, it was supposed to be 40. Yeah.
And then we had to pay for construction as well, which maybe we spent around 5 just for like, you know, putting things up, Alex having a second hand, painting. For leases, I basically started sourcing studios in Manhattan. For me, Black owned was the big thing, but I didn't want to be in Brooklyn or Harlem because I felt like that's where there would be another Black owned spot. And I was like, nah, like white people love following Black owned shit because they just want to be a part of something. So I was like,
and we appreciate them for it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Thank you. They're right next door. And basically I was like, yeah, I want to be in the bougie spot. You know what I'm saying? Because I felt like that would be able to offset what people would think could be expensive for the price. So looked up some places in Soho. I got so lucky because during the pandemic, commercial leases were fucked. Did a good guy guarantee. Now, if anyone's never heard of that, it's basically where you can sign a long lease. But a good guy guarantee is if something goes wrong with the business, you can end up leaving with like 3 months notice or something like that. So it was pretty easy to be a little bit flexible during the pandemic. And even right now, because commercial leases are tanking because everybody has online businesses. So brick and mortar for us has been so beneficial because nobody wants to be here anymore. We spent probably 50 in equipment and startup and maybe 20 when it came to operating costs for, you know, buying computer systems, getting the layout, buying licensings for like, I don't know what program you use because I don't do tech shit, but whatever that is, you know, paying for employees and then, you know, putting the deposit down and shit. But what's amazing is that literally from inception, we never spent another dollar out of pocket. That's how much clients were coming in immediately.
So what was the marketing, right? Because this is the pandemic, obviously during the pandemic and over the past 5 years, podcast going crazy. People need a place to record. How did you get people to realize that this is the pace they need to come?
I think it was a combination of using our eyeballs that we have, because you know, she's on Horrible Decisions, I'm on Flagrant 2, and also it was needed. I just saw it was something that was needed, where we grew by word of mouth more than anything else.
So I think what really helped us, which I even realized even in my personal life, when people offer me a free service, a lot of our big clients had a first session free in the beginning. So Brilliant Idiots, Horrible, I was paying, because we were paying another studio anyway. So it was great because I could fund Horrible Decisions through my other business. So I was getting paid twice, kind of. But you have Charlamagne and Andrew Schultz, me and Mandy. So then you've got, boom, these two set of eyeballs. I actually think the big turning point, as much as I'm joking about white people, we had every cool black podcast at one point that didn't have a studio. It was like, damn, but ain't no white people in here. So when Call Her Daddy broke up, Sophia Franklin needed a space to record, who is the one that didn't make the $60 million. So I offered her some free sessions, and all I asked her to do was say WTF Media. I don't need the full ad read. I just want people to start knowing the name. And literally, I don't even know if white people realize it's from her, but it just started to trickle down to where we ended up having larger partnerships with companies like Dear Media or Amazon or whatever. And I'm not saying it's all from Sophia. It definitely has to do with Alex and I putting ourselves out there, even down to Tribeca Film Festival, where we've been out in the streets. But that shit really helped, because sometimes you're only feeding your own audience. And that was the biggest gap I think we had in marketing that we didn't realize. We've never spent a dollar in marketing. It's really just been offering our service, and then people come back. It's great to offer something free. It's like a free sample. Like, people are gonna come back. Nobody else has this good of cameras. And to be frank, we hired engineers that were also podcasters, so they kind of have the vibe. You know, they know how to be the little laughing track if you need. They know they can be a C mic if you needed to add it on. Like, all of that wasn't inclusive in other studios.
And how much does it cost to book like a session?
You could pay anywhere from $60 to $250. Our average client spends about $300 per hour.
What's the difference between $60 and $300?
$60 is just audio. You're just starting out, right? Different studios also have different prices. LA is a little more expensive because of the landscape. But we kept our prices low on purpose, because we know that the average podcaster that's watching us or wants to start up, they may not have all the bread. Then we got y'all who may spend four-figure numbers when you need mobile shoots. But you know what I'm saying? Your podcast is bringing in more. Horrible spends more as well, because we need more bells and whistles. But if you just need baseline audio, $60. If you just want one angle, $150. Like, we've made it pretty easy. And we never raised our prices either.
Oh, okay. So like, if we have a four-camera setup here, but if it was like a two-camera, that would fluctuate.
Yeah.
All right. So I remember when you guys were starting, it was just that one studio, and then this was getting built out. You went over on that one. This is a bigger studio. Is it the same price point, or was like, all right, now I know the price that I need to be at to make sure that this is functional?
We kept it at the same price point.
So yeah. It was 50 again.
Yeah. So we never raised until now our newest location in Midtown.
Yeah.
And that one's even larger than this. It's a little bit more premier. And I think the only reason why it's a little bit more is just to offset. I don't want everybody rushing to the new one. So it's like, just to keep it balanced, where it's like, we still have clients that love coming here, but then also, you know, when something's sparkly and new, people want to try to go there.
I would assume, and this is probably right, the cameras are the most expensive piece in here.
Cameras, computers, like,
yeah. So like, if for the people who can't see, like, what are the things that are needed to make this thing functional? Obviously cameras. I see we got the Shure SM7Bs. Yeah. What else?
So it was important for me to, like, you know how new tech startups, they want to disrupt the market or whatever. So I, working in production for as long as I have been, I saw all the things people were doing wrong. And I saw also how like Hollywood and other places overcharge for a lot of stuff. So like, I just found that middle balance where it's like, okay, let me get the highest end, let's say, camera, but I can go for a cheaper lens to offset the price. And then the quality doesn't really drop very much, and I can keep costs down. So that was like one of the things that was very important. And it's like, a lot of other studios, they look cheap, and I didn't want that. So I wanted us to look premier, because like, that's going to be the main thing that sells the studio. But then also, I can't have, like, you know, red cameras, like shit that you use for movies, because then we would just go broke.
But Alex making the choice to spend that much in equipment I think is the biggest reason we flourished.
Yeah.
We fought about that a lot. I'm like, we only have this much to spend. Why are you spending that? Just get some cameras. We cool. Everybody finna come to us anyway. And he was like, no, but nobody has these. And it's true. When you look at other studios, they almost have like that webcam-y look sometimes. And so I was like, but we're going to take so long to pay ourselves back. And he just had a lot of faith in volume. And he was right. Mm-hmm. Because it's true. A lot of studios don't have this because it costs way too much. Having $10,000 cameras is ridiculous. One camera? Like, it's crazy. But no one else could get it for that price. And so instead, whereas $150 was kind of cheap, now we've got 10 people a day at $150. Mm. Whereas if another studio had that, they may have been charging $500 a session, which is probably what you should be paying for these. But we ended up just getting people to come in. And so it's great because you could see a podcaster like yourself have your show on a set like this, and then someone who may only get 100 views, but they're happy to be able to do that too. So the fact that they could work up to it is really the thing. That's why it's like low-key a little FUBU for us, like for podcasters by podcasters, because we knew it costs too much to make something look nice.
So what about, what's the other revenue models? You have brand partnerships?
Yeah, so that actually worked out for us really well because we started learning what we were spending money in and what was costing us the most monthly, quarterly, and annually. One thing that was happening was lenses. So and mics. So Alex literally started reaching out to all of the companies that, you know, were big in cameras or big in audio and being like, yo, this is our studio. Everybody's going to use it. You need to be giving us free shit. Shout out to Tiana. She was managing our
exactly like that, but basically
whatever.
Like I went to a lot of those conventions where it's like you have all of the camera, audio, lighting, all those playbill, and just face to face, and it's the best thing. And then you tell them about the studio, and then they want to have a relationship with you because they know that, hey, if you have a show like EYL and they're bringing all these people, people are also looking at how it's being done. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so we have a brand partnership with Sigma, Black Magic, even water, our soda, like we have partnerships like that because people know that people are going to come in here, look around and see what's being used.
Sigma for the lens, Black Magic's the camera.
Yep.
What about, are we here? Or I'm not even going to mention them for the
moment. No, not yet. All right. Not yet.
You had Rode, I thought.
Of Rode for our wireless mics, this pH water.
But like, that's the thing. We found out how much we were spending in like beverages alone. And it was like, what? Like, this is too much money. So now we probably save $20,000 a year across the studios just having free beverages for clients, which is just, it's a small little thing that you don't think about. But like, truly, that was it. I mean, the next one, like, I'm working on is a Wayfair partnership. We spent mad bread in, like, furniture.
Yes.
And I learned that from even, you know, working with Kenya Barris. Rich niggas don't pay for nothing. They don't pay for Ubers, nothing. They put them credits right in your account. And the more I've been around wealthy people, that strategy, and it's not like Kenya Barris, the 100 millionaire times over, is hounding down Uber. Your team is figuring out how to use your platform, your influence, and be like, yeah, you want this person to be riding in these types of SUVs? They should have this. It's like, that's the thing. So Alex and I kind of had to learn how to do that. Mm. We've never paid for marketing or PR. So it's like, okay, how are we supposed to do this? So using our own profile to kind of leverage everything else.
So let's talk about Kenya Barris. I mean, this is obviously a relationship. When I think of you, I mean, the first time I met you, it's always been about the business of podcasting. It's always been business with you and in podcasting specifically. How did you develop that relationship and what do you currently exist in the Kenya Barris world?
So, I was at a party, I walked in and Kenya was the first person there and he was like, yo, are you on Horrible Decisions? Are you Wheezy? And he said, I'm Kenya Barris. And I'm like, nigga, I know. And he asked me to take a picture, which I thought was hilarious. He's like, bruh, you dubbed me, because he asked for tickets to a show in LA. And I like wrote back or some shit and I said it was sold out. And he wanted to bring people from his office. They loved Horrible. So we start vibing. He tells me about his Audible deal. And he's like, yo, I need someone to run it. Like, I'm filming TV. I have my music division. Like, I want someone to run it. And I honestly believe that WTF Media, if not for being built that 6 months prior, there was no way I could have done that job. So, and Alex helped me so much. So basically, took on the job, making podcasts easy. But when it came to building the landscape, difficult. And it's great because I've literally funded all my businesses down to my TV show through the others. So Horrible brought me to Kenya Barris, right? Then we've got to build studios. I hire Alex. Alex becomes, you know, the audio producer for all of the projects and building out structurally how things will look. You know, we created a sound system for him in his loft, which was the studio that Gangsta Grills was filmed out of. WTF Media then produced Gangsta Grills because I had to hire, you know, a team. Mm-hmm. So it's been great. Right now, I mean, I'm working on Kenya's other podcasts for Audible and producing all them, EPing them. And it's an amazing relationship and partnership because what he really showed me is that you can exist outside of your element. Kenya hired a podcaster to run his podcast division, and it was the smartest thing he could have done. Because whenever I was on Zooms and meetings for him, it was all film and TV people, and they're talking in movie and TV language. Mm. They're thinking we have to spend $20,000 a shoot. I know that's not true. You giving me millions of dollars in a budget. I'm like, nigga, I'm paying myself. What the fuck? But like, it's really that type of shit. These big entities and these big companies don't understand how grassroots podcasting is. So when I came in, I was able to really reinvent that for him and really show like, hey, like this is what we should be doing. And it's been amazing. Like, I mean, I posted a picture with Malcolm Gladwell and him the other day, and I'm like, I cannot believe podcasting brought me here, bro. Like it's a trip because what's happening now, people like us that were normal people that became famous from podcasting are the outliers. Word to Malcolm Gladwell. But like, seriously, now it's the celebrities. And the celebrities are getting $2 million to make a show. And they're probably going to spend $500,000 in production. That's crazy. Making a podcast for a year does not cost that much. But you give me half of it, I'll tell you what to do with it. And that's really what's happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So Alex and I have made our most money from the largest deals like that. Mm-hmm. Not particularly Kenya Barris. Like, I'm salaried, right? But it's stuff like that. It's the big company that comes in like, yo, let's just say it's a bank. We had a meeting with a bank, right? Huge bank. I would say we all probably have the card in our wallet. They were given a certain amount of money a year to make financial videos for kids. So they know exactly how much they have. Hey, what do we do with this? It's a six-figure number. I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to probably give you $1,500 to go home with. So you felt like you saved. But at the end of the day, like...
You didn't tell them to call Earn Your Leisure?
What do you mean?
Like, you said you know what to do with it. Like, you didn't tell them, oh, I know the guys you should call.
They already had their... It was a sponsored podcast by Bleep. But it's things like that. It's like being able to be trusted by companies. So that type of partnership is like really what makes us money. Granted, being in here is amazing and making people's dreams come true by them having their own show and finding a voice is dope too, but it's the big fucking bucks.
So when you say that, when you are a consultant to people, companies to consult on their podcast divisions?
Pretty much. I mean, as a production company, that's what we do. And we take a call, right? It's like we figure out your needs, we figure out how you're going to build something. And they probably ask two other companies.
So you're shooting it for them?
Yeah.
Shooting like, it.
Start to finish.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like they just have an idea and they're like, hey, can you make it happen? So we'll come up with concept, how it's going to be shot, the look of it, shoot it, edit it, deliver it to them.
Might even pair you with a co-host. Yeah. We might say we know people.
You make social clips?
Yeah, everything.
So, all right. How did you market yourself to major corporations then?
So how that ended up happening was truly from clients. I think the first time I saw it happen was, oh, I think you might remember, but we had a client work for something like Lululemon. And do you remember him?
Yeah.
The dude that was riding a bike here? Lululemon. And then Lululemon had money to make videos, but they didn't know how to create those videos. And we've got the mobile team. We got the DPs, right? It's like something like that. Or it could be even a bank teller and she works at Bank of America and she knows that they have money for creators. It's like everybody in here. Also, like, it's just like kind of Afrotech. If you go to Afrotech, you have all of these companies that put the black people out there to say, hey, go figure out, you know, how to make something creative. This is the budget we have towards it. So when these podcasters are coming in, they have a production company, which is us, who can actually go and talk to your company about how much we need. So we can set whatever it is that they tell us they have the expenditure for.
So you guys, I mean, that's from the consultant side. Was there ever the thought to say we could be our own network of shows? Right, because I know obviously this is the relationship with Black Effect, but you have direct relationships with people coming in here.
We've talked about it.
You see talent coming in. Is it ever, you know what, we could create our own thing?
We've thought about it. And working with someone who's also talent and having to, you know.
It's a headache.
It's a headache. And so I didn't want to take it that
way. We have to build the team out so much.
Yeah.
Y'all know this.
And it's like, if you're not
producing. I'm always interested in hearing.
Yeah. So it's like, if you're a podcast network, you're responsible for growing their show, getting sponsors, advertisers for their shows, and like keeping them happy. And so we're breaking our back just running this business. I don't think I'd have the bandwidth to also make sure every show is happy and we're delivering in the way we should be.
And so, keep in mind, what are they going to want? You join WTF Media's network? Who do you want to help you every single week? Alex and Weezy.
Yeah.
Because truth be told, with Charlamagne is so big that no one is expecting him to answer the phone, which is why I'm always in fucking shock when he does. Like, I don't want to call this nigga for extra Black Effect tickets, but if I did, he gonna pick up. Like, I think that that's what makes Charlamagne so great to people who know him. But like, Alex and I can't do that because we're still growing. Like, we don't have it. And I think if we started a network with just 5 shows, they're going to want us to make those shows. Now, how can I do that? I'm doing horrible. I'm filming a fucking TV show. I'm working on Kenya shit. I'm running this business too with Alex. It's hard. He's got Brilliant, Flagrant, and his own projects. Mm-hmm. So if we can't deliver, then our network fails. We've already seen it happen. And it's like, you can expect too much from the head of the network. So I don't necessarily think just because we have the resources, that means we need to jump in everything. Mm-hmm. I want to jump into the moneymaker, not the thing that's going to take me time. However, one thing I did learn from Kenya, when Kenya saw a clip of my TV show that I do on Fuse, he called me and said, "Why are you doing that? Like, is that not exhausting?" I was like, "Yeah, it is. Like, I'm on set 14 hours a day. It's exhausting." He goes, "Weezy, one day you will learn that producing is going to make you this most money. You can make 20 things at the same time and not be tired. You put your name on something, that's what you need to grow to." And that taught me a lot because Alex has been working on that.
Being behind the camera.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I produce probably, I'm up to 5 shows now. And it's like, sometimes silent, sometimes I'm out there, but it's like, that's what I like to do. And so that's why I feel most comfortable. And it's also, it allows me to stretch myself as thin as possible. I can really produce at the quality in which I want to produce at, being a producer. If I tried to be talent and a producer, I wouldn't be able to do it.
How much of a shift with that is that for you, right? Always be, I mean, for year, 8 years now were horrible, or is it 9?
Eight
years of being face front. You had the show on Fuse, obviously other things going on. Is that something you want to shift to, or are we like, what are we doing? Are we trying to find a balance in between the both?
I'll be honest, I'm 33. I'm very confused. I make a lot of money and I don't know how I make money. I really don't know what's feeding it the most. For example, Horrible Decisions used to make more money than WTF. It doesn't anymore. Now this business has grown so much that, I mean, actually maybe gross, I would say, because, you know, Horrible, we split it down the middle. We're paying employees here. We're buying equipment. We're starting new studios. So maybe there's, you know, some leeway there. But for me, Kenya wouldn't have known me if I wasn't in front of the camera, right? I'm producing all this shit for him. But at the same time, I feel like I'm getting my name out there because I'm in front of this camera. So I'm a little bit scared to completely make it obsolete because I don't know what'll happen. I think I need a few more years under my belt in production. What's also a little bit scary is everybody knows me from Sex. Everybody. Even the TV show is about business, but it's called Sex Sells. We talk about money so much on there, people don't even realize it. But I think it's just confusing me a little bit in this point in time, because the more as I grow as an entrepreneur, the more nervous I get to completely being back. I know that the marketing is keeping people coming in the door when I'm in front of the camera. I'm just scared. I know we get word of mouth. I know people walk by. I know there's mad referrals, but something about Weezy and not Gila, that's my name, is keeping people in. It's keeping people attached to me, you know? So I don't know. I don't know my sauce without my persona.
So,
that's honest.
How much revenue is it actually bringing in?
So, we, 2023, made our first million, 1.2.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And literally, 2022, our earnings were in the 500s. Before that, it was 2. So, it literally doubles every year, right? And when I saw those numbers changing, because Horrible makes money, but not that much and that fast. it's a slow, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Grind.
Slow grind for podcasting, right? Because you have to do so many things to make money from a podcast. You don't just make money from ads. Y'all know that. You got to get on the road. You got to get the merch. You got to do the speaking engagements. People ain't putting that motherfucking work in. And that's why Horrible really did well. I don't know another black girl podcast that was on Patreon. I don't really even know another black podcast that was on Patreon before us. I remember telling Andrew Schultz to make a Patreon. And that nigga rich as hell. Not a nigga. But like, it's crazy because we really had to grind that shit out. And luckily, Mandy and I both were working corporate jobs that we fucking hated because we were like, oh, bitch, we getting out this shit. But with Alex and I, it's a little bit different because our money is coming at larger volumes and quicker. And I can't recognize if it's because of our own profile, because Horrible took so long, mm-hmm. or if it's truly because this business is that much more of a moneymaker. You know, like it's tough to figure out how it's happening. We had someone come in to scale the business, which I recommend to anybody, to show you where you make the most, the times of day you make the most, who is spending the most, things like that. It's like, it's a real investment in figuring out how. Because looking at that number on the tax return was great, but it's like, okay, well, shit.
How we do it.
Yeah.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right. We're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shadi, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys.
So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the home buying blueprint, volume 1 and volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
What time, what is it, the strategy? Like, is it the weekends? Like, what times a day? Who are the people that you're making the most with?
Weekends are dead.
Weekends are dead.
Not dead, dead. I mean,
we're busier on weekdays.
The daytime hours. That's the, you know, the people that wants to be a podcaster are probably the ones that don't have a 9-to-5. They're the content creator that wants to do their shit in the day. Even your guests, y'all know this. They don't want to come at night. Everybody wants to be done just like a regular job. Now, from about 5 to 10 p.m., we get the person that is working the day job, mm-hmm. right? Like, I remember the last time I was coming in here late at night, I walked my dog in the area. I saw a dude literally ripping off a Chipotle outfit and jumping in the studio. And I thought it was amazing because it's like, oh, damn, you really like coming to do this shit. But for us, the weekdays are the busiest. The people that are spending the most are the podcasters that have multiple shows to put out in a week. For example, like, you guys have more sets, you're doing different cities, you know what I mean? But like, you need to put content out. Someone like y'all, and then the companies. So Dear Media has all of their shows in New York come to us. So it's pretty much whatever they're spending that month on 10 shows. It's those networks, right? Mobile shoots make us the most money. And I would then say the shoots that are a series, an Audible series, an iHeart series, whether it be an HBO Max, whatever it is, they're the ones that have that huge, crazy budget.
So like a Dare Media, we'll just use them for example. They come in, they have a multitude of shows. They're blocking off a month of space. So how is that being booked? Like, are we doing it weekly, monthly, or is it like quarterly? We need this much space for the quarter.
It's not really that, more than these companies need the leeway. So Spotify, for example, came to us and they're like, yo, your shit's booked up. Like, we need to be able to have some kind of agreement where we can have some time. And so I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? Kick out the girl that maybe spent less than them? That's kind of fucked up. Mm-hmm. So really, it's the flexibility. They just kind of want that end-to-end person. These companies need the hand-holding from us. They want a text. They don't want an email. You know what I'm saying? They need that immediate contact. Like, they're like, yo, we got Trevor Noah today. We need it right now. And Alex and I got to figure out a way to make it work. And hey, maybe we're telling that $60 person, we're going to give you 3 free sessions. Right? Not because I want to kick you out, because I ain't going to kick you out. but maybe I need to spend more money to move them around to accommodate this person because they spend so much. So it's kind of just figuring out how to like play that out. But that's what these big companies want. They want our personal time. They also want more flexibility, and they want, you know, discounts. Just like with y'all. Like if you're buying so many hours with us, we hit up AB, like you need to buy blocks. You need to buy 20 hours up front. You've got the money to spend, right? Like it makes more sense. And what could help our business, not like we need the cash because we don't. But when you're selling shit like that, right? And you're selling blocks at a time, you get some extra capital to then open something up quicker. Mm-hmm. So if I say, hey, instead of you paying $100 an hour for 10 sessions, mm-hmm. why don't you spend $90 an hour and buy 20? That's not a big discount, but it's enough for someone who has bread. And so then we've got all this extra money to build a new studio. Mm-hmm. We rarely were paying ourselves back. We just started taking a salary. We just took that salary like 6 months ago.
So as far as like competition, who's your competition in this space?
None.
Not in New York.
Like I say with your chest, Alex.
I mean, I don't want to be rude because my co-host decided to make a podcast studio, but none.
So, but do you feel like there's going to be, why is there none? Because there's just not enough competition, there's not enough studios, or there's no studios that's doing it at the highest level like you guys?
I'm being hyperbolic. Of course, we have competition. There are other podcast studios. Like this wasn't, we weren't the first, but I just feel like we are doing it the best. And so the quality shows and people come back. Like we don't really have to encourage people. Like we said, we've never paid money for promotion or anything like that. It's like we offer a good service at a great rate. And that's what keeps people coming back.
I think the rate is truly it. Like
yeah, every year we've had to open, like had to open another studio because of demand.
So where's your studio located at right now?
So we have two here in Soho, Canal and Broadway. We have one in Midtown on 38th and 8th. We have LA on Hollywood Boulevard. I forgot the cross street on that one.
And then mobile services in LA and New York.
And then,
you know,
and she keeps saying LA and New York. We have mobile services countrywide.
We have five physical locations.
Yeah. And then working on a six.
Where at? Atlanta?
Don't want to say yet.
You should go.
Why? Just say it, because I don't want to go.
You should go to Atlanta.
I want to do it in Toronto. I think Toronto
is. I want to do Atlanta. Thank you.
Did we have this conversation?
Yeah. No, me and you had this conversation.
Yeah, you had this conversation.
Because I think he's a nut.
About Toronto.
Here's the.
Toronto. No, just one
city. Toronto is an amazing city.
Shout out to
they
Toronto.
They have a big podcast market, love, Alex, but they don't have the infrastructure.
I told her this.
Right.
Did you tell him this?
Yeah, I called you about it.
I've been telling her this forever.
And I was like, you should definitely do this.
Okay, let's talk about two things. Fight about it in the comments, okay?
Okay, all right, okay.
Help us earn your leisure.
All right.
Actually, I would love for y'all to dictate where we would do it next, because I truly trust y'all's financial advice. You've both made me money, like seriously. And even when I first started listening, and I've heard so many people say, oh, they got too big now, because you know, you get such big names, but those small companies that were making money like really helped me out when doing WTF Media. I really feel like someone listening to this, like, yeah, sure, it's not Stephen A. Smith, but maybe they thought about starting a brick and mortar space too. And like, it's that average listener. I'm that average listener, you know? So he wants to do Toronto because no podcast studios are there. Duh, it makes sense. We would make less money there because of the conversion rate.
But you could spend, they have good spending habits in Toronto though.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but
higher prices.
People spend less there. I know that from my live shows. Toronto was one of my most packed rooms. We made the least because they just spend less there. It's just the truth.
They didn't spend less when we went out there. We did two shows back to back.
That sold out.
The biggest, that was at Market Monday. That was the only time in history that we had to add an extra show.
We had a great volume. It was our best show. Mm-hmm. However, the ticket cost was less according to Live Nation because of the landscape.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm speaking from firsthand experience because we throw events, right? And we dictate the ticket prices. So like London for us.
Yeah, Live Nation.
That's what I'm saying. So we dictate our own ticket prices.
Mm-hmm.
London is not a good spending market. Toronto, we had no problem with them spending money. They brought merch.
They did buy merch. That's
the ticket price. We could have actually raised the ticket prices. I think we still could have sold out.
We could have had a third show.
I mean, maybe it's the spending habits, like you said, because the income isn't there, the disposable income, right? Now, we're in a fucked up economy anyway, so I'm not to say New Yorkers have mad bread to spend, but here's the thing with Atlanta that I'm feeling connected to.
Is that, that was yours is Toronto, yours is Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like we will probably go with Toronto because to me, this is Alex's thing more than mine. And I have more trust in him for that. And LA was kind of the thing I wanted and I got to get it, right? Mm-hmm. But Atlanta, people have been asking for this in Atlanta fucking 3 years since we started.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Atlanta.
You can't go wrong with Atlanta, one. And two, I'm shooting with Mandy after the Black Effect Fest. I don't want to be rude, but the fact that I had to book a space and then book a camera team to come in that space, there is no setup like this in Atlanta.
I think Dave Shands has a setup. You know who he is?
No, does he do a
social proof podcast?
He came up to me in the
Sleepers for Suckers.
He has a content
studio.
It's pretty nice.
It's been very difficult to find. And the other thing is WTF Media now has a almost like the pillars. You kind of know how it works when you walk in. You know what to expect when you're receiving it. And I love that we have an aesthetic to how we're treating the client, to how they're receiving things. They just get it. It's seamless. We have a director of comms who's managing all of them. Like, you kind of talk to the same people. I love that. And I don't feel like, I feel like Atlanta's very confusing when I'm trying to book shit, which is insane because all the goddamn Black people there making content, how is it so fucking difficult to make content? Like,
I mean, it's a good market for sure.
It is.
Yeah, it's a good market. I never said it was.
He's right. There are studios that exist. And then to Alex's point, he said all of the big shows already have a home base.
In Atlanta?
Yeah.
Who's the big shows in Atlanta? 85
South? 85 South, Port Lines.
Yeah. Well, the 85 South has they have their own company.
Yeah, they have their own company.
Yeah,
Port Lines shoots out.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, yeah.
But it's a lot of up and coming.
Yeah, who are white ones? We need to get new white ones.
The white ones, but then not the big shows, but just everybody that's just trying to have a podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, again, the big shows really, it doesn't matter, right? They're not making us the most bank anyway. Like, I think 70% of our clientele is somebody that's spending, like I said, in the 300, yeah, 250 to 300. Yeah. But, you know, Ian actually told us, we had a conversation with Ian, who was telling us that we needed to raise our prices. And we got into a really deep back and forth with him about it because Ian wants us to scale larger, which, of course, as a friend, and he helped us with our LA studio.
He's a partner in that, right?
Yeah. Like,
shout out to Ian.
Yeah, shout out to Ian.
Master Investor.
It was tough because I got so angry at him in this conversation, and later I understood why he did it. Ian's thinking tens of millions. I'm thinking that too. I'm just not thinking it tomorrow. And so I want it to be longer. I want to fucking sell our shit and fucking live on the beach, bro. Okay? But the thing is...
So how much did he want you to raise the prices to?
Double, maybe more than double.
Ian, like $10,000.
But the thing though, $10,000
session plus
1 hour. Like,
bro... Because I said to him, he's like, well, yo, you know how much money people making and you just charging them like $300? Like, how does that make sense? I'm like, bro, you're rich. When you walk into McDonald's, you don't pay more. You know what I mean? Like,
the volume play.
It really is. And like, I know what he's saying because we've been working on film sets and shit like that. Ian's thinking like, yo, fuck this small shit, go bigger. But for us, the small shit is still us. People know us because we started small shit. I'm not a celebrity.
Honestly,
that made a podcast.
The ethos of when we first came up with this, it was like, yo, we want to have a space for us. Because I was thinking, it's like, you know, we hire mostly POC, and it's just it wasn't intentional at first. But
what you mean? Yes,
She was a little bit OD with it. I said
black in all caps.
Whoever's going to be the best employee.
And but, now we've got two Asians, man. We really diversified.
That's all it takes.
But it was more important for me to offer this service and especially have our community be able to use it. Because it's like, we are in Soho. Like, you go shopping around here, it's very expensive. But I wanted to keep prices down so we can service everybody. And that was really important. Even when the studio has gotten booked out, where we are at the price, I mean, at the place where we can raise prices, I still want to keep it at where it's at. Because now the people who are just scraping by, it's like, if we raise prices now, yeah, we'll make some more money, but now they can't use the studio anymore.
Yeah, you really fucked them over.
You priced them up.
Yeah.
But it's like, so it's like for a record label, like the music business model of like studios, right? Like, you got up and coming artists that use studios, but then like Sony has their own studio, or they might book a studio for a month for a major artist to just record his album or whatever. As the landscape of podcasting starts to get more refined, and less people are participating in the lands, because that's what's going to happen, right? It's going to be less people participating over the course of time.
I disagree.
I don't think that's true.
I disagree.
I heard you say that.
Why do you think that's...
Everybody
wants to be famous.
Everybody wants to be famous. Everybody wants to be heard.
When they realize that it's almost impossible to have a successful podcast.
But right? It's not about that's... See, you and I are thinking the same thing. People do know how difficult that is, but they don't care, Rashad. They just want to have a successful Instagram page. They just want to have a successful TikTok.
But I don't...
No, truly.
For how long...
I promise
you. You see, so many people start podcasts and then 6 months later, they're not doing it no more, right?
Sure.
It's like, who wants to be consistent in doing something if you're not making no money?
Or is it like a rotational thing, right? As soon as that person's tired, there's a new person that's...
Yes. Like, there's so many podcasts that we don't have anymore.
Right.
That literally, when we started our new space, I reached out to some people like, hey, you know, come through. We haven't seen you in a while, blah, blah, blah. And they don't have a show anymore. And it is what it is. But, bruh, every day we're doing tours for someone who's new.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I know what you're saying. These people want to make clips. That, to me, is the new wave. And that actually still exists in this business model. People want their Instagram to have clips of them either talking to camera. They just want to be this influential person. They want a thought leader, so to speak, right? Like, even one of our engineers, Wolf, shout out to Wolf. I've been joking, like, nigga, when did you become Dr. Umar? When between clients, you know, he get on the mic and he just start saying shit, but now people know him for that.
I got a new show, y'all.
I don't, like, and that's the thing, right? It's like, it doesn't even have to be a podcast name. It's just the content. People really... We are in the era of that.
But how we survive as a podcast industry when 95% of people aren't making money? Like, if you can't, nobody's buying podcast. Like, you buy music, you stream it, mm-hmm. right? No, you don't stream podcasts. You get it for free, right? So the model itself is not a sustainable model.
Well, people shouldn't be making
That's
podcasts.
True. Yeah.
To make money, though.
The percentage thing, even more so, is right. How many people make music a day? There's over 300,000 songs that are uploaded every day. Probably less than maybe 1% of the people that actually put out these songs make something from it.
But
they're not quitting their day jobs.
They love doing it. Like, there are some people that actually just enjoy meeting up with their friends and talking behind a mic. Even if they're not making money from it, it's like, if some people get into it for money. Some people get into it just for the love. Some people like just to hang.
Yes.
And there are a lot of shows that make little money, maybe not big money, it's not y'all money, but there are shows because almost every streaming service, they put the dynamic ads in it. And so it's like they're getting little dollars here and there. It's enough to just pay for the studio time and keep going.
I actually want to shout out a podcast that spends hella money in here. It's a podcast called Conversations with O. He gave me an amazing interview. His podcast isn't huge, but he's had, you know, Keys on there and different, like, just celebrities and influencers.
And
but
he's one of those people that he has his 9-to-5. He's a teacher, and then he comes
and he
out
said
here.
To his students, we know. He brought us in for career day, and he said to his students, yeah, I have a podcast. Like, and he called it a hobby. I had no idea it was his hobby. The way that he treats that show, the money that he's spending with our studio, that really shocked me. Like, you're really investing in this hobby. But truth be told, he loves it. He's actually really brilliant at it. Sure, he hasn't been discovered in a large level yet, maybe. But, like, the fact that he's doing it because he loves it, that's how people end up fulfilling themselves. Mm. So, like, that podcaster is making the studio money. And there's 100 of Zoe. Zoe is just one that really sticks out to me because I think he's brilliant, but it's that type of shit. I also think when it comes to podcasting, for anybody that's listening that wants to make money on podcasting, advertisement, yes, horrible, Earn Your Leisure, those shows make podcast ad money, but if you're not there, that doesn't mean you can't make money. You have to go make the money. You cannot wait for some big entity to hit you up mm-hmm. and say, yo, start selling these undies or this water or these tampons. You need to be doing BTS content, extra content, finding out what your fans love from you. For example, you guys always have a guest. If Rashad and Troy only did episodes alone shooting the shit, we would pay for that, right? Because we never get to hear their personal lives. I want to hear more about your kids. Maybe we do in, like, little ways. But you know what I'm saying. It's the other kinds of shows. You're doing Blackout. Sooner or later, if you put that on a paywall, you're already going to have those fans that watch it. You're going to have a certain percentage come over. And that's what happened with Horrible. Like, we only started Patreon because we didn't want to come out of pocket for video anymore to pay Alex. So breaking where we were out. Making $500 a month from Patreon,
yeah.
Now it's somewhere from, like, maybe 15 to 20. $1,000 a month?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's just extra content that our fans want from us. People love Mandy and I alone. Even though we might be fighting on a mic, that's what they want. So we get our ass on that Patreon and that's where you're going to see it. So like, it's figuring out what people like from you. And also when you're starting your show, you can't come out the gate with the Patreon, bruh. Y'all done just said, hey, my name is Zoe and my Patreon is this. Chill. Figure out.
Disagree.
No, you're tripping.
Disagree.
You have to have a fan base first, Alex. You have to have a fan base.
You can do both. You can put out a portion of the episode live and then you can make a portion of it behind a paywall, because people are just looking at, oh, I have to have a large number of followers and fans, but you don't. Like, if you have 10 people subscribing to your Patreon, that's fucking what? That's like $150? Oh, how much is Patreon? It's like,
that's top tier.
Okay, that's top tier.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, regardless, even that pays for your studio time.
I mean, you know what? I will agree with you to the half, like, some content here, some there. But what I have learned, because I have another podcast for fact's sake that's now only behind Patreon. I did it for 2 years for free, and then it didn't grow to the degree of Horrible, but we make bread on Patreon now, right? Because maybe 20% of fans came over, and that's enough. Now, I just think that people are starting too much by asking for money. Deliver me the content first. Give me something to get excited for every Wednesday first. And we're so used to seeing Kickstarter, GoFundMe, Patreon. Chill, bro. Like, give me some shit I want to see. Get me used to this shit and then offer it to me behind the paywall.
You got
to
become part of somebody's daily routine, their weekly routine.
Absolutely.
Now you're part of their life.
Y'all know about consistency. Bro, if Mandy and I have I don't really think we have late uploads like ever. Maybe the YouTube guy, if he got sick one day and didn't upload that shit, all them bitches are in the email. Where the fuck is this? Mm-hmm.
So, but I do get what you're saying. The big money in podcasting is gone. It's like the big Rogan deals, those are no more. And so now, yes, I do think the popularity of everybody wanting to get rich, like the gold rush is done. So it's maybe not as popular to start a new show, but I still think like
it exists in scripted. It doesn't exist.
And exclusivity, they've taken that out, right? Even Rogan's not exclusive anymore. Yeah. And Call Me Daddy's not, they took the exclusivity out in the new deal. So that's going out too. Just because of what Spotify was spending, how are we recouping?
Yeah, they weren't recouping, but...
But I will tell you, seriously, the scripted money...
Scripted what?
Scripted podcast. And I'm working in scripted podcasts with Kenya, that's how I know. Mm-hmm. I'm almost in awe of those budgets.
What is a scripted podcast?
A scripted podcast is a podcast that is shorter form. It's basically like an audio movie. It's not an audio book. You're not reading out words, but you're listening to actors. You're hearing Foley. Foley is the sound. You're hearing... Let's just say it's a restaurant scene.
This is like Dateline, but audio?
No.
Like Serial?
I don't listen to Serial, but is it a murder podcast?
Yeah. So a lot of the true crime
ones are...
Like true crime, that's what I'm thinking, like true
crime.
Sure.
Yeah. So a lot of
But they're giving, like Kerry Washington has one, right? She's got a big one. I'm trying to think of another one on Audible that's huge. Charlamagne did some, right? He's got an Audible deal with Kevin Hart. Mm-hmm. So like, basically how it works is there's a full script, like TV or film, but you're adding in more sounds and ways to figure out location so that the audience knows. It's amazing. The romance ones, I listened to one with Demi Moore called Dirty Diana. I ain't getting paid from this shit. I'm telling you, phenomenal. I was invested in the tea. Her husband was cheating. You hear the footsteps. You hear him pick up the phone. And like, you don't need to see it because you could hear her say, what is that? Why are you grabbing that?
But this is not like an audio book.
No, it's not a book because they're not reading just words. Right. But
so it's like the in-between between podcast and an audio book. So it's like
those are getting money in bigger deals because they are having bigger companies pay for them. You've got the actors and there's so few of them. So we can find millions and millions of podcasts, but the scripted ones, maybe you've got, you know, a few hundred that are, you know, that are great to go through. So people rotate those. And the advertisers are loving putting money into those because people are really sticking and following all the way through to listen. Mm. And they're also already behind paywalls. It costs so much to make them. You got to pay $10 on Audible to listen to them. So it's already there. It's already behind a paywall. You know, it's not free.
You talked about something that you just disagree with. I want to go back to something that you also disagree with, Alex. You said, we scale this thing. Eventually, I want to sell this business. You said no. Why?
So, I just don't want to lose what the business is in terms of the environment that we've created here and the level of service.
We do it like Honey Pot. It's still black.
I would do something where it's like, if we sold, but then I'm still, you're crazy. Like, say we sold, but then I would still have like a managing role in the company.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I would never want to sell and just like fucking sell ourselves out.
Yeah.
You don't live a clean life. Like, I'm not going to feel good when I go to bed at night. But for me, I think.
One second. Just, and one of the big reasons is because we pay our employees really well.
Yeah.
And I know the very first thing someone will do is buy and slash what we pay, slash out.
But we can't keep building and having more employees if we don't ever sell. That's the other thing that's in my brain.
I know, or we can partner up. We could have silent partners where it's like, hey, I'll let you run the business how you are. I just, here's some bread and let me get my return. So it's like, we can, there's different ways to go about it. I just don't ever want to lose like the ethos of the business.
What I would love, let's just say Sony comes in and decides they want to make podcast studios. They're like, yo, WTF, make all our studios. And it's branded as maybe WTF or Sony, like a conglomerate together, yeah, but we like figure out how to make it. We give them our sauce. Alex does all the layout, blueprints for every single thing, and we can emulate this business to where it is successful. That to me is when I say selling. It's not like completely handing over keys, but I just know that how we've changed some of our, one of our employees was homeless. When he told me that shit at a Christmas party, I was shocked that he was homeless before here. And like, it taught me that, okay, I didn't change enough people's lives. Like, we didn't really get in there yet. But that's why Alex and I didn't take money. Mm-hmm. It was literally, should we give them a raise or us a Christmas bonus? That was our first thing, and we didn't. We never took it. I believe, though, when you give, you receive. It's not even on some phony shit. We're just those type of people. When you start a business with another giver, it's a great thing because you really see it multiply. We're not, like, greedy-ass people. Like, we never been like that.
So before we leave, if somebody wants to start a podcast and they don't come here, what are some essentials that you need to start a podcast? Because even us, like when we started a podcast, we didn't even know there was an option for a podcast studio. So we just started it ourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are still doing that or there's just everybody's going to podcast studios these days. But like, what are some essentials that you need?
Like at home.
Audio, camera, stuff like that.
Well, if you're going to do it yourself, just know that it's going to be a lot of work. And so a lot of people get into it thinking just like the upside, like, oh, I'm going to make money, I'm going to be famous. But it's like, it's a lot of work that goes into it. So sometimes it's cheaper to budget out using a studio than it is to set up your own at home situation. But I think the most important part is consistency and like knowing that it's going to take some time for that shit to grow. People think my first episode, I'm going to blow up, and then they get discouraged. And that's,
this is going to be technical, right? Because this is shit we have to figure out. Best mic for podcasting.
I would still say the Shure SM7Bs.
All right. Best cameras.
Best camera. That depends.
Low level.
Low level. I love Blackmagic. I would say Blackmagic Studio 4Ks, the easiest to use for somebody new with still having.
How much is it?
That's $2,700.
And the highest level?
Highest level.
That was low.
Yeah, I mean, we should wear red.
iPhone Max, so I thought you
Yeah, that was low compared to other stuff, but like, they should wear reds. Like, reds are great, but then if you don't have somebody there focusing, then it's like you're going to have some shots that are out of focus, and it's harder to deal with. You have to add the color after the fact, so it's like, it's not the best camera for somebody starting out, but...
I actually have a few tidbits that are not technical that I think people...
I need one last one first.
Oh, God.
Because we got the mic, we got the cameras, but we need an interface. So like, right, we got to get this audio to something.
So right now I'm in between because we use both. We use Rode Podcaster, and we also use Zoom PodTrack P8 systems. They're both really good mixers. They have like built-in like sound compression, like a lot of things where you won't have to do post-production. So I'm in between those.
What about Riverside? So for someone that knows nothing, Riverside, you plug in your mic, your co-host is on the other side, it puts the track together.
Yeah.
You have a podcast.
If you're doing a Zoom podcast, I would go Riverside virtually. Over
it's
Zoom.
So
yeah,
easy.
Virtual. Yeah.
Like,
that's for the virtual play.
Yeah.
But you could also plug it in, like if you're in person, right? Because putting the layering the track together is very difficult. Nigga, I'm telling you, but someone's dumb watching, and I'm dumb with tech stuff too.
Yes, and you're telling them something dumb right now.
That shit you've been doing hard. No, I was literally going to say, a lot of people that come in to start shows, when we used to do consulting, Alex still does. I can't because I consult for Kenya, but when you Have your name picked out. Make sure no one else has your name. Make sure the Instagram handle exists for you. And if it doesn't, you have to get rid of it. Like, I'm telling you, those little things, when people type it in on Instagram, making sure you're branding all of those things, making sure you pick a day of the week that's not the weekend. People don't necessarily listen to podcasts on the weekends. When you first come out, have about 2 episodes to come out with first so people kind of get the vibe. Also, making sure you know how to edit it, because what generally happens with friends on a mic is you kind of, you start spiraling and you tumble and it starts turning into something else and it gets very boring for the end user. So Horrible Decisions has segments. I still love those. The Read did it. They were one of my favorite podcasts. I would suggest figuring out outlining and segmenting your show. Even if it's just improv, you still need to figure out a generalization of what you talk about. Your show should have some pre-production. Now, as time goes on, maybe you can't just get on the mic and do whatever you want. But if you don't have pre-production, people can tell when they're listening. Figuring out the comps. If you're going to come out with a sex podcast, who are the other sex podcasts and how are you different? You need to know that shit in 15 seconds. So many white people say to me all the time, oh, you have a sex podcast? Oh, like, call her daddy. As if I didn't exist before them. You know what I'm saying? So that's very hard to hear. And I'm sure with some black girls that start a podcast, they say horrible sometimes, you know what I mean? But you've got to figure out how you're different. Horrible talks about kinks. Like, that's a specific thing to us. We talk about kinky things. Maybe yours is queer shit. Like, you need to figure out your angle. And if you don't, you kind of take the L.
And podcast is not just talking. There's like, it's something you have to get good at the more you do it. Like, for example, I'm talking right now. She's probably waiting to see, like, oh, if his statement starts to drag on, let me jump in to help him. You guys are probably prepping your next questions, but you also are responsible for keeping this engaging. And this is like a dance that the public doesn't see. They just see like a conversation that goes well. But it's like, it's one of those things that you get better with time. And a lot of people get discouraged when it's like their podcast sounds dull in the beginning, but it's one of those things they really get better at the longer you do. And I think it's really important.
The number of followers your guests have does not fucking matter. If your guest is a big TikTok star, that does not mean it's going to translate into podcast numbers for you. They like that person on TikTok. They don't want to see that bitch talk for 1 hour. You need to really think about how your guest correlates with your content. I know y'all know this shit at this point. Like, I'm sure you've interviewed a celebrity that you were just like, what? Because I have too. You know, one of my most popular interviews on the channel was the City Girls. But their energy wasn't the same with Mandy and I. And it was so hard because they talk about sex all the time. Mandy and I are hype as fuck, but that shit just didn't translate. You know, when she did Carisha Please, it was great. But like with us, it just wasn't it. So like podcasters are great people to coordinate with because they generally know how to talk on a mic. But seriously, you get someone with 2 million followers on TikTok, that shit don't mean nothing for you unless you a TikTok podcast. Like, really think about where your demographic receives you. That's good cross promotion. This right now, thank you for making us some money. Somebody gonna be like, they got my guest. You know, this is what I mean by cross promoting.
Yeah.
You should be doing shit like that. When you guys have people on your podcast that have larger platforms on YouTube, obviously you see a spike in your YouTube numbers on that episode or whatever, because that's where their people are listening to them. And then they get to see Earn Your Leisure's YouTube channel right after that. The same thing with podcasts. If you think about having a podcast, don't be a guest on nobody's podcast until you got your podcast. Because right when that episode is done, they need a place to click on you and find you. And if it's just your Instagram, no one's going to care to click on your shit. And I'm not saying this to be hard on anybody. I have just been consulting on podcasts for so long. I started in the era of podcasts where literally like, YouTube podcasts weren't a thing.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much about the landscape and I can only share what I know. And I think those mistakes are the biggest ones people make.
There you have it. Appreciate you guys' time. So how can they find you on the social and book an appointment to come here and all that stuff?
So the studio is WTFmediastudios.com. I'm on Podcast Flagrant. I'm also on Brilliant Idiots. And Wheezy is...
I'm Wheezy WTF. You can check me out on Horrible Decisions or Sex Sells on Fuse. You can check that out on Amazon Prime.
Oh, all right, guys. Thank you for rocking us. I'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Most tax pros leave a message.
it's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.